Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome to the Creep Dive. I'm Cassie Delaney, a treasure. That's Jen O-D-W-I-E-R. And this is Sophie, voice talent and best-selling author White.
Thank you.
Well done, everyone, and welcome to the show.
I have a great headline.
Come on.
Go on.
She mourned her son's death at an Ottawa hospital. Then he sent her a text message.
Ooh.
Yes. So
BuzzFeed headline returns.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so this is a story about Heather Inslee and her family, who spent 3 harrowing days at the bedside watching her eldest son die.
Jesus.
So this is Ottawa, which I believe is Canada. And they were completely distraught. He passed away, and she was like, okay, I mean, we have to honour his wishes. He was an organ donor. She started planning the funeral. On the day he was cremated, she received a text message from an unknown number, and it was someone claiming to be her dead son asking for money,
which sounds quite a lot
like those scam messages.
Yes.
And so Heather was just like, what the fuck is this? And she called her husband, Bill, and Bill was like, it's a sick joke. And that's awful. It's like really disturbing. And even if it had been just a scam message, terrible timing. So a few days passed and she was still planning the funeral and got another text. And so she decided to ring the number, and the voice that answered was just like her son's voice.
Oh, what? That is so terrifying.
And she was like,
a young Canadian guy.
What is happening? And
what did she say to him?
I mean, she was like, oh my God, your funeral is tomorrow. What?
Where
are you? What? I'd say it was just probably something like that.
Yeah.
And so it was him. It was her son.
Hang on a second.
Yeah, remember, she had just had a vigil for 3 days at the bedside of her son in a hospital, watching him pass away.
So the hospital didn't think to give her the heads up that, in fact, not dead.
So, not her son. What has happened?
Not her son.
It's not her son. So she got onto the police and they tracked down the son. So I think that their relationship was possibly not in the greatest place. But obviously it was in a good enough place that she went to be at his bedside.
And then he wanted to borrow a few quid.
She, yeah.
Who was the,
So she was like so happy that he was alive.
Yes.
But she'd done all this mourning. So it was massive emotional whiplash.
But who did die?
And so Sean is the name of her son.
Okay.
And he's been given by the media the nickname Lazarus Sean. Love it.
On the nose.
Sean of the dead.
Absolutely love it. So he is 43 years old. He's not a young guy. And he said that it was quite chilling to hear
that he had died.
Mm. And it's quite kind of funny because now Lazarus Sean is like, well, I am determined to live a different kind of life.
He didn't do any of the suffering.
I feel like I've been given a second chance, he told Ridiculous. Media. Which is taking it to in a weird direction. And
Sean's the worst.
Sean's
like, it's the mother who thought she'd been, you know,
it's
vigilizing her son.
Invigilating her son.
Perhaps.
And so they hadn't seen each other, Heather and Sean, for 4 years. And he had had his struggles with addiction and moving around a lot. And so the family had been primed.
I just can't stop moving.
Well, in recovery circles, that there is a name for that. And the name always really cracks me up. Geographicals.
Get out.
Yeah, like you'd be in a recovery. Maybe I shouldn't say this. Recovery meeting, you might have somebody be like, I did a lot of geographicals.
You're good.
But it's people trying to outrun
the problems
that their addiction has brought about.
Nomads.
And so basically because of his issues, the family had always been slightly primed to like one day receive a hospital call being like Sean's OD'd or, you know, something's happened. And then so they never expected that it would be like a tragic mistake and that they'd be holding vigil at a stranger's bedside. And so Heather resaved Sean's number in her phone under Lazarus Sean. But she has been completely traumatized. So basically what happened was it was a misidentification of a patient who had been admitted to the intensive care unit. So they have now belatedly, after the passing, identified the patient and notified his family. And like, so that family missed out on saying goodbye.
Oh my God.
Because this other family were saying goodbye. And
at least he didn't die alone. But he died confused. Because if I was on my way out.
But maybe he felt really loved. And isn't that what matters
what
in your final moments?
Totally. Like, I agree. You would be like, I don't know who these people are. But they seem to love me.
So what, well, there is now, there's some deathbed pictures. Now, they've blurred out the face of the poor man who is lying with his not parents.
This is, obviously, like, this, I've seen this frequently.
The photographing the moments?
Photographing someone on their deathbed with the other family members in. Yeah. I showed you guys a photo last week of, remember, someone I came across on a dating app who had a photo of themselves with Imelda May and Shane McGowan in their final moments.
No, Imelda May is still alive.
Shane McGowan in his final moments. I thought, I couldn't believe that's not a spoof.
And I got the full story.
I matched, of course.
I matched and I said, I need to understand what is going on here in this picture.
What is your connection to Shane McGowan?
And the person was like, Philomena's dying, or Philomena Linnett's wish was for me to give Shane McGowan a statue of Phil. And I was like, row it back. We're going to have to go back to understanding
why
that is.
Are in there.
And this person had just become friendly with Philomena Linnett, taken a little statue of Phil Linnett, made their way into Shane McGowan's dying hospital room, gifted Shane McGowan the...
Yeah, you don't have a right to confuse people in who are dying.
But that now that person's dating app picture is that moment, which
is strange. But
I imagine a great conversion rate.
I can't say this on the public feed. Sorry, I'll just keep it to myself.
How bad was it?
Oh shit, that was
well, once I was
This is a main episode.
This is a main episode.
Yes. I forget.
No, that's fine. It's staying in.
Yeah, no, one time I, through the jigs and the reels, was talking to a man I didn't really know, and he was talking about losing his wife, and it was very sad. And then he was like, do you want to see a picture of her? And I was like, yeah, of course, yeah. And then he showed me a picture, and this was...
her last moments.
Well, no, I think it was...
post...
yeah.
Death.
No.
I do think that you need to forewarn if it's a corpse in the picture.
Truth. Yes, absolutely right. I think it is... Okay, so... But who, hang on.
So what happened was, basically, this man, who they've all mourned, was found unresponsive on the streets. So it seems like he was, like, potentially without a home.
I see.
And he was admitted to the hospital and he never regained consciousness.
Okay.
And so the thing is that one of the nurses in the hospital, God love this nurse, was like, oh, I recognize him. He was in a couple of months ago. Uh-oh. So she was able to root out the name, our name, Sean, Lazarus Sean's name, and was like, we better, contact the family next of kin, everything. And so when Heather and Bill arrived in the room, like, there was tubes and life support equipment, and like his face, they were like obscured. Well, for starters, he's very unwell, so he's probably going to look a bit, you know, different. Mm. And also his face was kind of obscured. And when the hospital contacted Heather and Bill, they were like, we just can we just confirm your son's birthday? And so she did, and he was like, okay, you better get here as soon as possible to say goodbye. I mean, traumatizing stuff. She got in the car and immediately drove 4 hours to get to the hospital. And like, she said that they did genuinely like share a likeness, like same haircut, same hair, just like my boy did. I mean, it's tragic. Long eyelashes. It was mad. Like, she said at one point that she was looking at the feet of this guy in the bed, and that he had this kind of distinctive family toe.
What?
Sorry. It's like a kind of a particularly knobbly sort of big toe. Funnily enough, there's a distinctive family toe in my family. So it's inherited from Seb. It's really funny. So basically what it is
it's that
the middle toe is longer than the bigger toe. So the foot looks like it's giving the finger. And
beautiful.
Seb and all three of my children have it. The long middle toe.
Ah, that is gorgeous.
It's a family toe.
Just back to things here to me. I just remembered this other experience that I saw, and I screenshot it on a much beloved app called Tinder. And if you guys would like to visually call out what you are seeing here.
Oh, dear God.
I can't really.
Say what you see, Jen.
Okay, so can we say his name?
Probably for the best that we don't.
So let's say it's Stephen. He's 43 and he's kissing somebody.
An elderly.
Who appears to be on life support, or.
That's photo number two.
Shut up. What
it's
is
his granny.
This? Do you know what this is? It's a sub.
That is photo number three.
It's a subgenre of Tinder called necromance.
Necromance. Yeah. Yes.
So
it's somebody who is
a
very
middle-aged
elderly.
Man kissing a very elderly woman on the forehead. Another image is holding a very elderly hand.
That fucking
in
woman
a bed.
Has tubes going into her nose.
She's got a
guys.
Breathing tube on. And then there is an image of what do we call him, Stephen? Kissing this elderly woman on the right. mouth. And then we have the mouth picture again with hearts added into the image.
That poor woman.
And they were the only four things. And that is why we don't do dating apps.
Absolutely mad.
Yeah.
Absolutely mad. Anyway, they're obviously investigating about, like, you know, why it's a grave mistake. You'll pardon the
pun.
Yeah, it's just mad. Absolutely mad story. But listen, Lazarus Sean is going to turn his life around. He's been given a second chance.
Okay, happy for Sean.
Yeah.
Sad for true dead fellow whose name no one knows.
No, they did contact his actual family after the fact. And after he was cremated and everything. I mean, imagine if that had not been a part of their plan. Like, that's a real faux pas.
Sort of on that nurse.
I know.
Putting two and two together.
Just imagine.
You'd be in bits.
In bits. Okay.
So some other competitor for Creep of the Week.
Do tell.
So she lost about 800 grand in an injury lawsuit stemming from a car crash. Do you remember this one that happened this week? Yes. After photos showed her launching a Christmas tree during a post-holiday competition.
And my dad's really having a chuckle about this.
Yeah, she won the event.
Now, this is in Ireland, isn't
this
it?
This is in Ireland. She's 36. Camilla's her first name. She sued an insurance company. She sued RSA Insurance after a 2017 car crash. She claimed caused her debilitating neck and back pain, and that prevented her from holding down a job, right? So she'd sued them, and she was also in receipt of a disability allowance. So she was fully stocked up on her, you know.
Done very nicely.
And for some unknown reason decided then this year and to be photographed, not only photographed during the event, it's an epic photo.
But she won it,
didn't realize that that was of her. I thought, I was like, how did they have a stock image of a Christmas tree throwing competition?
Not only that, she also is photographed holding the award itself full on. She's posing for it.
Lovely, warm looking jacket. That's a gorgeous
absolute
color.
Absolute silly Billy. So in other silly Billy news, did anyone wonder to themselves, geez, I haven't seen Kate Middleton in a bit.
Oh, I fucking love this. I didn't realise this was the thing until people started getting into the DMs and being like, I need to hear your theory on what, and I caught up with it. Kate Middy.
She's gone, lads.
Has not been seen.
Since Christmas Day.
Since Christmas.
Christmas Day, right? You remember King Charles went in for an operation.
Yeah.
He has the big C.
And he's got the big C, prostate cancer. So the official announcement of Kate going into hospital, which was, I think, 8 weeks ago, something like that, was that she was having planned abdominal surgery. No more questions, thank you. No more questions.
So, she's... So everyone was like, stated that she was gone into hospital.
She went in around the same time King Charles did, and she has not been seen bloody since. So the 17th of January, the palace announced Kate is heading in for planned abdominal surgery. Everyone was like, what could this be? Could be anything.
My favourite are the suggestions that she's gone in BBL. To get BBL.
It is absolutely hysterical. Or there was another suggestion that she had received some fat deposits from Charles himself. They were doing some kind of swap, body swap while in there.
Oh, God.
So she is, official statement from Kensington Palace, based on the current medical advice, she is unlikely to return to public duties until after Easter. Very strange.
Jesus. And what's going on there?
Here's Rebecca English from the Daily Mail.
For tubes tied?
Yeah.
Tubal ligation?
I don't know.
So you're not going to be in for weeks.
No, true.
So for those commenting on why journalists have specified the princess's condition is non-cancerous when she is keeping details of her condition private, it is because aides are happy for us to publicly share that information in order to minimise public concern about her condition. On and on they go. Denial after denial. Day before yesterday, William was at a family funeral. No sign of Kate. So
what's
who
going
knows?
On?
They are divorced.
Is one theory.
Yeah. She's dead is another.
They're trying to get they've a had replacement a really, Kate.
I mean, they've had a big year with the death of the Queen.
That's right.
Now, Charles has got the cancer. If Kate Middy died, be left with only the spare and Prince William.
Well, Charles is on the way out. He's going. William's going to take over. The new king. He's like, I don't fancy this princess anymore. She's not into the pegging. Gotta find me another one.
We're on a main. They'll sue.
They won't. So anyway, that's where we're at now. Nobody where in the world is Carmen Sandiego?
Yeah, there's gotta be something.
Something fishy's going on there. Something fishy. No doubt about it.
And what is gonna happen, right? If Charlie passes away and Willie has to be the king. Can you be a king without a queen, or is that like against the rules? And is it going to go then to Harry and Meghan?
No.
Because it'd go to the, actually, it'd go
I think
to
it'd
his
go to William's son.
Son.
Who'd want it, sure?
Neither her parents nor her children have been seen since Christmas.
Something strange is going down.
Apparently an ambulance was called to their Christmas compound at Christmas, like.
Oh, yeah.
William has supposedly never visited the hospital.
Very odd.
Yeah. And he went to the BAFTAs alone. Well, I don't know if it was the BAFTAs or a BAFTA-related party. And the funeral.
Sorry.
And apparently he was using his own personal crest rather than the one used to represent the married couple.
I saw that as well. Very, very odd.
Tabloids think there's been a lot of fighting. And that he's thinking of divorce, so he put her in the hospital just while he had a little thing.
Well, obviously, if she turns out to be quite serious, we'll regret laughing.
But then, right, there's
I don't know. Sorry.
So no. There's other tabloids that usually would be extremely vocal about matters royal and but adjacent. They like Kate and they haven't been white. Saying anything. Which could be that there's an agreement. Like, that they're not Silence. Reporting. Then, in Spain, the tabloids are reporting that she's in a coma. And
that's so Spain.
It's obviously Spain, the whole of Spain thinks she's in a coma. But their source is that one of the nannies, excuse me, is apparently from Spain. And that she's come out and she's well-placed informant. And it's interesting that the kids haven't been seen either. Are they keeping? Are they storing them with her in the hospital while soon-to-be King William has a little think?
The memes are flying anyway on Twitter.
They're
and
so funny.
Another excellent suggestion. Obviously, she hasn't been seen in a long time. Perhaps she is working at the less than magical Willy Wonka event in Scotland.
Yeah.
Have you seen this?
Another it's theory epic. Here that she's set to replace Lorraine Kelly and she's not actually in hiding but in preparation.
Big boots to fill there. So in Glasgow this week, Scotland families very excited about going to an immersive event billed as Willy's Chocolate Experience, complete with DALL-E AI imagery for the event.
The imagery for the event is absolutely class.
And nonsensical text beneath the imagery.
Like, it's on those people. Like,
the signs were all there. The flags, the red flags were waving. So they were met, anyway, with what they described as, and you can see from the photographs, an empty warehouse filled with lackluster decorations and few, if any, promised treats. Lads, there wasn't a single chocolate. The kids
they got
kids.
One singular jelly bean.
A single jelly bean and a half a cup of lemonade. Like the tiniest, like
a shot of lemonade.
It was like 35 or 45 pounds a head.
Ooh.
It was dementedly stupid. There was like 20 chairs, a couple of tables and a half inflated bouncing castle. So the photos of the gathering are all over Twitter and it goes from bad to worse. I don't even know, like, whoever put this on, at what point did they think it was going to be okay? Like, this will never fly.
Were there workers on shift dealing with these annoyed people?
As far as I can tell, there were three actors hired, one of which...
Did you see the TikTok from the guy who was hired to play Willy Wonka?
That's right. So his name is a stand-up comedian hired to play Willy Wonka. And he said, he broke his silence saying, I'm constantly applying for more acting jobs and comedy work. And then I get a phone call saying, congratulations, you are going to play Willy Wonka. We will send you the script and dress rehearsal is tomorrow. He was thrilled. And but he goes that he received 15 pages of AI generated gibberish of just a monologue of mad things that makes no sense. And at the end of the monologue, he was supposed to suck up the unknown man with a vacuum cleaner. So the unknown man you will have seen on Twitter is a man wearing a silver
face mask. Terrifying looking.
Crappy kind of black curly wig and a sort of black dressing gown crouched behind a very average mirror. A freestanding very, mirror?
Very normal freestanding mirror.
Yes. So he arrived, the guy who was due to play Willy Wonka, and he was like, so any, do you have like the vacuum, the special vacuum cleaner that's going to be able to fake suck up this unknown man? And they were like, yeah, we haven't really got to it, so you'll just have to improvise.
There was a lot of improv. So they told him to totally just like disregard the script that he had learnt off. The entire script had been AI generated. So yeah. It was just absolute horseshit from the start anyway. So the rest of the time he just had to like go around and half talk to these kids and give them their one jelly bean and their quarter cup of Tesco's own brand lemonade.
Oh. Who's this one with the meth lab?
She is the Oompa Loompa.
She's not even orange.
She's not orange. She's really obviously clearly embarrassed. Because like Willy Wonka, the actor hired to do Willy Wonka, she was arrived on the set and was like, so they were like, hey, you got to improvise. Be an actor.
I've got to say that if their only error was setting the expectations bar very high with the AI. Like, if you didn't have that in your head going in, you might be like, oh, okay, sure, they've gone to some effort here. They've got the purple factory wall mm-hmm. and doors, and they've got a lovely rainbow, and they've got a few bits. Oh, Jesus, I've just seen the fucking the guy mirror. In the silver mask and the wig. Mad.
It's bad, Ted.
€35. Look, they're gonna
the place was packed.
Never stop chancing your arm.
Never, but they're going to have to refund. There's absolutely no way they're going to get away with this.
Well, they closed it down then after half a day and they put out a statement. They're like, we're really sorry. We were let down with our, they said like holographic paper. So there must have been some intent to like project things all over the place. Now, it's the warehouse was just too big. And you know when you have a big room, what you really need to do is bring the furniture and the bits closer in from together. The walls. So yeah. You create an environment. But they had stuck up these random sheets of like lollipop adorned paper just on the walls with massive gaps between them. The sad, tiny, half-deflated bouncy castle. And then these black... Just this weird black area with the scary person in the mirror.
The man, what was it again? The mystery man.
The unknown.
The unknown man.
And according to the script, you're supposed to, he's either a chocolate maker who is evil or he is a maker of evil chocolate.
It was a bit unclear, yeah. And there was absolutely no chocolate to be found whatsoever at the event.
No, none. Diabetic friendly.
It's so funny because the thread on Oddly Terrifying on Reddit, the original post has been removed by the mods because it's quote, sorry, but this post has been removed. Per rule 6 of this subreddit, we do not allow jump scare posts or posts that are obviously fake. So basically, Oddly Terrifying is a place for pictures that are not straight up terrifying, but simply oddly terrifying.
I see.
And okay. Whatever picture they had selected from the Willy Wonka experience was deemed too terrifying for Oddly Terrifying.
So just before I give you the update on the mummy vlogger, and then I'm going to tell you about a wonderful spokesperson. Well, sorry, wonderful is not the right word to use for this spokesperson for Subway, but a wonderfully bizarre story about a Subway spokesperson. We are going to take a little break here because we're going to have some ads. If you are not in favor of ads, you can get an ad-free episode every week now on our Patreon.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too.
Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Anyway, back from the ad break there.
Just act natural.
It's just as natural. I think the worst part about the ad break is you won't hear our voices in any of the ads because we haven't been asked to do them.
So. And never will be.
It's only a matter of time.
Anyway, we have an update on the mummy blogger that we covered a while ago. So to give you a brief synopsis, this is the story of Ruby Frank, who was an affluent suburban mother living in Utah and the US. So she had been managing a YouTube channel with her, kind of covering the lives of her children, parenting advice, etc. And what had happened was, in the 30th of August in 2023, a neighbor called the police because Ruby Frank's 12-year-old son had turned up at his home. He had duct tape around his ankles. He was really hungry. He was thirsty. He had obviously been detained and covered in wounds.
God.
So an investigation took place, and it was discovered that Ruby Frank, along with her business partner, had been keeping the kids basically kind of hostage in the house.
And abused and neglected. Abused,
neglected. They lived
the age range of the kids?
I'll tell you. The 12-year-old was the youngest. So Ruby had lived in this 5-bedroom, 6-bathroom house, total luxury, about $5.3 million worth.
Whoa.
With her business partner. The business partner was named Jody Hildebrandt. She was a licensed mental health counselor and life coach.
Oh,
and
gosh.
The pair together had a highly successful mommy video blog, like mommy blogging channel on YouTube. And Jody had another YouTube channel giving like life advice. I mean, bizarre. And together then they had another channel where they were giving like parenting and life advice. Jody charged her clients up to $3,000 a month for her services. And so they were like well in money, do you know? But behind the scenes, they were just terribly, terribly cruel to these children. So this week, just gone, both Jody and Ruby admitted to aggravated child abuse charges. So the charges that were brought against them last year, and they were each sentenced to up to 60 years in prison for what was described as a concentration camp-like setting in which they held that boy and his equally malnourished and frightened little sister. Oh, sorry, he wasn't the youngest, his little sister.
So bad.
So the courts this week heard how the children were... The courts heard during the trial that the children were regularly denied food and water, forced to do hard manual labor in bare feet, kicked and held underwater, and told they were possessed and evil and needed to accept punishment as an act of love. So an attorney who represented Ruby's ex-husband said that I've had many strange cases in my career in family law, but this one is right at the top. The couple had 6 children together. So Ruby's and Jody's whole mindset was about like breaking people down, deflating their egos, humbling them and disciplining them, which is just abuse. So she was charged with intentionally inflicting and knowingly allowing another adult to inflict serious physical injuries on her 2 youngest children. The prosecutors described it as torture. Her son was, for instance, made to carry boxes of books up and down the stairs and forced to do outside labor without shoes on in the summer heat, and had serious sunburn and blistered skin.
Oh, God.
And they had like just withheld food and water and basic things for them. Yeah.
And like, is it that the YouTube thing had been going and then they kind of like sort of phased that out and weren't into this like weird shared delusion? Like, is there any kind of,
do we have an insight into
like what the logic was out of YouTube family into fucking torture?
Well, I think she was still doing the YouTube family stuff. So like a part of there were clips of this going around last year in which she was, this is the woman who was describing how she took her son's phone and how he was sleeping on a beanbag.
That's right. He was older, wasn't he?
He was older, so
quote-unquote discipline.
Discipline. So
one of the children who was 5 or 6, who was responsible for making their own lunches, I think had forgotten her lunch in school.
She wouldn't bring it in.
And the school rang her and said, listen, can you drop in her lunch? Yeah. And she said, no, she'll have to go hungry. she neglected her responsibilities for bringing in her. Oh, she was five. Yeah,
so the name of the YouTube channel was Eight Passengers, named after her ex Kevin and their six children, who are now between 10 and 21.
I do think the father of those children.
Where the hell is he?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, so she was wildly popular at first because, again, like, not to generalize, but like it was in that kind of
Mormon
Christian
core?
Mormon core, yeah, strict upbringing. But by 2020, her videos then were getting really bad backlash because of the incident with the teenage son revealed that he was forced to sleep on a beanbag for 7 months. Jesus. As punishment for playing a prank on his brother. Another video where Ruby was sitting in her car detailing how she ignored the message from her youngest daughter's teacher saying the six-year-old had forgotten to pack a lunch. And she said, my hope is that she'll be hungry and come home and say, that was really painful being hungry all day, and I'll make sure I'll always have a lunch with me.
Oh my God.
And tons of trauma. Jesus.
So she's been sentenced.
It's just fucking weird flex to be so public about your parenting and being so fucking sure of your own righteousness.
I would be so interested to understand her relationship with Jodie.
Yeah, it's so bizarre. So
it feels like it was kind of a toxic, you know, they were obviously
but they're
spinning around the same and like deranged concept,
like, yeah, gassing each other up totally and just being kind of like, yeah, discipline, break them down, break down their spirit.
Yeah, so Jodie's, there's former clients of Jodie's as well, because obviously Jodie was sentenced this week. So she, like, independently has been involved in a lot of controversy. So she'd been, in 2012, she was put on a period of professional probation for discussing a male patient with a porn addiction with leaders of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and in a university talk without the client's permission. So former patients described her as over-authoritative, aggressive, and said that she operated her business like a multi-level marketing scheme, urging patients to recommend her to family and friends. But she was a powerful voice within the LDS community, and the religious people in authority regularly recommended her counselling services to people in need.
Yikes.
So
did she have children of her own, did you say?
I don't think so. Okay. I don't think so. And it is unclear as, I guess, to why they moved into the house together.
She's been sentenced to years and years. Do you have her
60 years?
Six
them up zero. To 60 years, yeah.
My God.
So unlikely. I mean, they'll be in prison for a really long time, thankfully. And of the older kids had cut ties with the family, but I'm hoping that the younger ones are now in with either their father in a caring environment or in appropriate care
somewhere
safe.
They've
got to do fucking something about YouTube families. Like,
I know
it's not right.
Yeah, before sentencing, Ruby's,
they're like,
yeah,
so
they're not consenting. They can't consent.
Oh, this is,
they're,
I read this young, horrifying report this week about TikTokers kind of monetizing their children to pedophiles online. So their children, gymnastics, swimwear, their accounts exclusively photographing these children eating in swim and doing gymnastics. And the interview was with parents. The parents remained anonymous, but they were acknowledging that they were funding their lifestyle.
This demographic.
Yeah. It's the new Disney fucking parents, hell, isn't it?
Yeah, because exactly, Cass. And I guess from their perspective in the interview, they were saying, well, this is funding our whole family's existence.
Yeah.
They were kind of unplussed by the fact that they were putting their children in physical danger by, you could sort of locate where the children were in the world. Yeah. And it was interesting.
Even
from a sense,
that,
because
like,
I think...
Sorry.
Some parents or some YouTube family, you know, mostly mothers in this case of small children who were females in this case, would have never acknowledged that this is who the market was, who they were catering to, and this is where the money was coming from. But these were, I think, three that did acknowledge it. This is what all of them, they know. They fucking know what they're doing.
Of course they do.
There's a really interesting TikToker, And she makes her videos of, you might have seen her, come across her. She's pregnant at the moment. She has about a 2-year-old little girl and she does ice baths in a kind of snowy forest. Mm. Have you seen this at all?
No.
So the kind of the opening shot is her coming along and she breaks the ice that has formed on top of a bath.
Yeah.
And she has a little bucket beside her that the little baby girl goes into.
What?
I don't think the baby girl's water is freezing cold.
Okay.
There's two strains. Yes, it's horrifying to think that they're kind of whatever, that you shouldn't be dunking a child in frozen water in the first place. And also she's quite heavily pregnant and who knows what the ramification, maybe it's fine, maybe it's not, I don't know. But the interesting part was you could see another person in the background chopping wood, quite far away, but you could see there was a it was a woman in a short skirt kind of bending over as she was chopping wood. And that user is somebody else who makes kind of kink work about strong women chopping wood.
Okay.
And you could, when you go into her profile, she's just this kind of fit woman chopping wood in the forest wearing kind of form-fitting clothing. Okay. But it's quite clearly kink.
Yeah.
Kind of kinky work. And she's an OnlyFans.
Yeah.
So what the fuck was she doing in this other woman's content if it was so innocent and it was totally unsexual in any way?
She was chopping wood, Jen.
But you know what I'm saying? I'm like, this, like, and why are they together? TikTok
know what they're doing.
It is the TikTok lumberjack bitches. I'm like, what the fuck? They're like, I don't know.
But it's really not even that they're, it's maybe not as intentional, but there's an awareness. Do you know? Because there's been loads of stuff written about how a lot of the behavior on a lot of the videos on TikTok, especially those with children in it, are people who are not there for the right reasons.
Obviously.
You know?
And you see them cast with the millions and millions of views. You can see the saves.
Yeah.
That's the fucked up shit.
Yeah.
It, like, during the interview with these kind of moms, during the kind of, before the interview kicked off, she was saying, like, you can see these videos look kind of innocuous to most people.
Mm.
For instance, a child eating was her suggestion. Mm. And I was like, wow, that's really fucked up. Mm. Mouth noises. And that's, someone's getting their kicks from that. It's so dark.
Yeah.
And then it has like 1400 saves.
Oh, God.
And you're like, who the fuck is saving this? It's somebody's these
fucking
people.
Banking it.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Like we're waiting this wonderful new 3-part documentary on the creator, the kids who were coming out of Nickelodeon.
Mm. Oh, where's that?
It's going to be released soon. So it's
who's making it?
I think it's HBO. I think there's an ad for it anyway. But like this kind of stuff, and we've seen enough experiences of child actors and people who are pushed into the public without their consent, and what they've said now, and it's just repeating itself.
Yeah, like the Jeanette McCurdy book is like the biggest kind of indictment of that, and the like really awful, like irony really is that like at this point, child actors in television and film are more protected than these kids on the fucking on YouTube.
It's horrendous. And speaking of terrible.
Oh no.
Terrible.
And kids.
People and kids. Would you like to hear about the Subway man?
Jared Fogle.
Jared Fogle.
You must have heard of him. This was scandalous.
No.
So Jared Fogle is an American man who was born in 1977. And he became this really famous face of Subway sandwiches.
Oh, Subway.
So he appeared in all their, like pretty much all their advertising campaigns from 2000 to 2015. So what had happened was he first came to media attention in April 1999 by an article that was published in the Indiana Daily Student. It was written by a former dorm mate of Jared's. And the story details how Jared had lost 111 kilos by exercising and eating a diet of just Subway sandwiches. So he was picked up and featured in a men's health magazine article called Stupid Diets That Work. And according...
What year was this, Cassie?
That had been in late 90s. 1999, I mean, the article's probably 1999. It's 2000 when he starts working with Subway.
So peak diet culture bullshit. I was about to say,
peak heroin chic.
Yeah.
And Yeah, oh God. And also, just an aside, Subway is truly rank.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
What is with the smell of it?
I think they pipe that in because they always smell the exact same. And surely they should smell, it's the bread, maybe just toasting away.
Okay.
So according to the article, Jared had become obese at one point in his life, up to 193 kilos, and just through a lack of exercise and eating what he described as junk food. So he changed his eating habits and started eating only at Subway, replacing his 10,000 calorie per day food consumption with one small turkey sub and one large veggie sub, along with some potato chips and diet fizzy drinks, which brought him down to 2,000 calories a day. So a Chicago area Subway franchise took Jared's story to Subway's Chicago-based advertising agency. And as a test, the company began running a regional television advertising campaign. It first aired on the 1st of January 2000, again, New Year, New Me, introducing Jared and his story with the disclaimer, the Subway diet combined with a lot of walking worked for Jared. We're not saying this is for everyone. You should check with your doctor before starting any diet program, but it worked for Jared. So the introductory tests were like a mad success, and he started appearing in more and more television commercials as well as a sponsored in-store appearances throughout the entirety of the States. And he started giving talks about the benefits of fitness and healthy eating.
Didn't he bring his trousers around with him?
Is that kind of thing? Yeah. Yeah. So he became known as the Subway guy. So he was like
his old pants.
Yeah.
And he got into one leg of them.
Gotcha.
And that was his bit. I don't think he was like, was he a big man for the talking back then, or did he just be a visual?
No, I think he was doing talks. I mean, he was so significant that he appeared in an episode of South Park, you know? So like he was, I guess, became one of these.
It's like the Colonel Sanders. He was the face of the
thing.
Company.
Yeah. In February 2008, Subway had a campaign called Tour de Pants, where they
celebrated. Tour de Pants.
So that must have been his known thing, you know? Yeah, so that was when they celebrated his maintaining his weight loss for a decade. So as part of that campaign, Jared made an announcement that he would retire his pair of 62-inch pants to a museum at the end of the advertising tour.
What museum is that?
I don't know. Like, it was just bizarre. And like,
also he was the Daniel O'Donnell Museum has his wedding suit.
Oh, there was a Daniel O'Donnell museum.
He has a museum.
So he by the start of 2008. He was appearing in less adverts because they were doing things like the $5 footlong promotion and stuff like that. But he was still appearing in, like, he was still really associated.
Jen's just Googled the Daniel O'Donnell Museum. Sorry,
no, I just was trying to. But then the Beijing Tap Water Museum came in and distracted me. 130.
So he was still appearing in loads of different Subway campaigns and things associated with Subway.
This is not retiring.
He had, by 2013, he'd filmed more than 300 ads and continued to make appearances and speeches.
Jesus.
I think his net worth was pretty up there at that.
Oh, it was getting there.
Amazing.
Because Subway attributed about a third to a half of its growth in sales to Jared. So revenue tripled from 1998 to 2011. So this was just like a big, it was such a huge thing for them, right? So he was in the Sharknado films.
I know, I'm here just happily smiling away. He was in Sharknado.
Yeah, yeah. In 2004, he'd started the Jared Foundation, which was a non-profit organization focused on raising awareness about childhood obesity through educational programs and tools provided to parents, schools and communities. So that was all going grand. He was well known, well liked, great success. Subway's happy with him. The pants are on tour. Everyone is, it's very American really, isn't it? It's just very like, here's a guy who was once large, is now skinny, buy this food and you too can be
Jared. Oh yeah, totally.
But behind the scenes, things were really fucking dark. Just really dark. So
was Jared not great?
Jared,
oh God, no. Bad.
So in 2007, Jared came to the attention of federal law enforcement agencies in Florida after journalist and radio host Rochelle Herman Waldron told the police department that he had made lewd comments about her middle school aged girls.
I can't believe a man would let us down like this.
So this woman, Rochelle, is a hero in this story. So she had met Jared at a local middle school for a health event as he was on his speaking tour. She made recordings of his remarks and saved text messages between them and then went to the FBI. So basically what happened with this woman was that she had, from the minute she met him, realized that he was a fucking creep. And she was like, I'm going to get him. I'm going to make sure that he's caught. So she befriended him, or like he thought he was befriending her, and recorded all of their conversations and all of their interactions. And he basically was just like saying the most horrendous things. At one point he said to her that he loved young girls because they had pure bodies. Oh. Like just really disgusting things. So Rochelle had kept track of all these horrendous conversations and things that they had had and the recordings and saved text messages between them. And so she went to the FBI. Now the FBI were like, he's not consenting to those being recorded, so we can't use them in court. But
fruit of the poison tree.
I know. But she then became an informant for the FBI. So for the next 4 years, she recorded conversations as part of an ongoing investigation. She recorded him making several remarks about having had sex with underage girls. God. And asking her to install a webcam in her children's rooms so he could watch them.
Oh, what? Also, why is he telling her this?
He thinks that she's a friend of hers and he's in on it. So
were they romantically? Was that kind of?
I don't think they were romantically.
But was I'm sure that that's what Ben Jared thought was going to happen.
Maybe.
Oh God, it's so sick making.
God, it must have made her fucking ill.
Yeah,
imagine.
And then back to, I need to tell you a little bit about the Jared Foundation now for the next part to make sense. So there was a man who was the director of the Jared Foundation called Russell Taylor, and he also was in, like, he was as inclined as Jared to for the
God.
The
pronoun, another paedophile.
Well, actually, you know, it's child-based sexual. What's it? Child-based
sexual imagery.
Sexual imagery abuse.
Child abuse imagery.
It's not child pornography anyway, but that's what it's being referred to as here. But it's image-based sexual abuse. Child image-based sexual abuse. Anyway. So Russell Taylor in 2015 was arrested at his home on charges of child exploitation, possession of child pornography and voyeurism. And according to court records, Taylor and his then wife, Angela Baldwin, had molested young girls and installed cameras in their house to film the victims without their knowledge. Now, Jared cut all ties with him in 2015 following his arrest. But it's
really not cutting ties with him soon enough.
Yeah.
CSAM cast going forward.
CSAM. Okay.
Child sexual abuse materials.
So during the investigation into Russell Taylor's child CSAM operation, authorities discovered that he had traded images and videos of children as young as six Jared, including images of his own stepdaughters.
Oh my God.
Taylor was sentenced to 27 years in prison and was later described as a co-conspirator in Jared's case, because obviously Jared is then caught as well. So on the 7th of July 2015, the FBI and Indiana State Police investigators raided Jared's home in Indiana and arrested him on charges of distribution and receipt of CSAM. Computers and other electronic equipment were removed from his home. The same day, a spokesperson for Subway announced that the company and Jared had mutually agreed to suspend their business relationship. Subsequently, Subway removed all references to Jared on their website. So following his arrest, the FBI subpoenaed a series of text messages made in 2008 between Jared and a Subway franchisee, Cindy Mills, with whom he was having a sexual relationship at the time. In these messages, he talked about sexually abusing children ranging in age from 9 to 16, told her to sell herself for sex on Craigslist, and asked her to arrange for him to have sex with her 16-year-old cousin. Her lawyer said that she had alerted Subway's corporate management about the text messages and his behaviour, but that they had responded that because Jared was not technically a Subway employee, there was no violation.
Oh, fuck them.
Subway representatives so that was said 2008. That they had no
recollection. For 7 years. 7 years they knew this guy was a fucking creep.
Of course they knew. Well, made in 2008. So, yeah, they say now that they had no record of the allegations made against him. So, in 2015, prosecutors announced that they had reached a plea deal with Jared in which he would plead guilty to their August 15th indictment containing two counts, one of distribution and receipt of CSAM, and one of travelling to engage in illicit sexual conduct with a minor. He was specifically travelling from Indiana to New York City, where he's charged with paying to engage in sexual acts with a minor girl.
Oh God! Like
who he knew was 17 at the time. So he pleaded to do that. He was fully aware. Oh, the court was there. Was some other charges brought against Russell Taylor at that time as well. And according to plea documents filed in the United States District Court for the Southern District of Indiana, he faced up to 50 years in prison. But because he had pled, I think the max he would get would be 30.
Good Lord.
The max he got when he pled was 12 years and 7 months.
Okay, that seems short.
It was.
The Daily Mail have run a story on back in 2019. They interviewed another individual serving time who's quoted as saying he's living the life in there. He's eating good, working out, cooking, not a care in the world. So he's in a low level security section of the prison. Door unlocked. He's free to roam around. He's got a computer. It's absolutely bleak.
At the height of his sort of fame, his net worth, well, in 2013, his net worth was around $15 million.
Jesus.
Yeah. So
just bleak.
Just horrendous.
deeply grim.
Subway's still going strong.
Is it though?
Don't know.
Is it? Yeah, so he's in, that's what he said, like he's in a very low...
Low security.
Low security. Like
just having a chill time.
Yeah.
Yeah, with a load of other sex offenders. Anyway. God
damn it.
God damn it is right.
Jesus, it's been a very grim, heavy episode.
Apologies.
I was going to take us out on a really grim story as well.
Oh, well, in for a penny.
In for a penny. Did you guys come across this one late last year about this teenager who... murdered his own sister, apparently at the behest of Satan?
No.
Oh.
So this guy couldn't look more like someone who is going to murder their sister at the behest of Satan.
I've watched an interview with this guy.
Oh my God.
Piers Morgan did an interview with him.
You fucking joking. Oh, wait.
Could be.
So the murder happened in 2019.
Oh dear.
Did Piers Morgan interview him?
I can't tell.
The guy's name is Leonid Grazer. He's Russian.
No, he didn't.
So
another sister killing lunatic.
So Piers he Morgan. Murdered his sister, Ariada, who was 21 at the time, saying that Satan/Lucifer had ordered him to do it.
Oh my God.
And she was, I mean, the murder was brutal. She was found in the hallway of the apartment block where they both lived. And, he's not well, this guy. Mm. Not an excuse, but not a well individual. When the police arrived, before they arrived, witnesses said that they'd seen Leonid, like, undressed and drawing demonic symbols on her body and his head. Aww. And he confessed initially without mentioning Satan slash Lucifer.
Right.
And then when he was asked why he did this, he just was like, look, it was necessary. And he said that he wanted to overcome his doubts, is what it's been reported as, and believed that killing the sister might improve their relationship.
Okay.
So he's truly not well. No. The neighbors heard the screaming. I mean, it's so fucking grim. And they think that there was quite a lot of kind of contributing factors. So they lived together, the brother and sister, and there was a lot of drugs found in the gaff, which can exacerbate if there is already issues there.
Yeah.
And so one thing that was quite, what's the word, like significant about this case was that when he was brought to court, he was younger than the sister by a few years. And when he was brought to court, they had him stored inside a box. So it's a kind of a witness box, but it's got a mesh, fully glass windows and a proper top to it. And so wasn't he inside the box in the court when he somehow managed to get up through the top of the box, and everyone in the court was like, oh, fucking hell.
He's
and
running away. He escaped.
He was trying to escape. He wasn't handcuffed for some fucking reason inside the box.
Probably because he was in the box. And they were like,
he's in the box now. It's grand. Got up through some tiny space in the top of the box and then busted up into the ceiling of the courtroom. And the ceiling is one of those ones that's made all of those individual tiles.
That's,
do you know,
right,
those ones?
Yeah, you can push up.
You can push them up. And like,
he gets
the the bailiffs were all like, fucking hell, jumping up after him. Somehow he lost his trousers in the middle of the whole thing. They had to, incapacitate him with tasers and things like that. And
Jesus Christ,
they
the
got
power.
Him back out of the ceiling. But I'd say now they might need to rethink the box.
Sure. Yeah.
Going
put
forward.
Put a lid or definitely handcuffs while in there.
Yeah, like for quite a few minutes they thought that they'd actually kind of lost him. And absolutely bananas.
Oh, Jesus
Now,
Christ.
I would find, like, it's so scary if you are in the same room as a man who believes he's listening to instructions from Satan and then you watch him climb out with super
natural
human abilities
strength.
I'd be like, let
Satan have his man.
I was like, not today, let that evil spirit go.
Exactly. Yeah. So then anyway, he was sentenced to a psychiatric hospital and basically they're like checking in with him every 6 months. And I don't know, like, hopefully now they keep him
contained
out of the ceiling.
It feels like for everyone's benefit.
Out of the ceiling. Yeah.
Keep that man out of the ceiling. Oh God.
I know.
This episode.
I know.
Has it been dark?
Do you know who he looks like?
Who?
Jonathan Groff, ever so slightly.
Ah, yeah, I can see it. If he had some lovely floppy hair.
I know. Like if Groff
and Uncle Fester had a baby, that's what
I'll tell you who he looks like. The guy Piers Morgan interviewed.
Fuck, you're right there.
There's a look.
Bit.
And maybe it's just the shaved head.
It's the bald, shiny head.
Where's the guy that Piers Morgan interviewed from? What's his
name? He's American.
Is it a really grim story or does somebody need to eventually look into it?
No, it's
Jennifer?
Absolutely awful. No, no. It's a murder of a very small child.
Oh, no.
So we won't go there today.
I love there's something wrong with our hierarchy of what's...
Exactly.
Like
appropriate.
That poor sister.
So we'll all have a little puke and a shower maybe after this episode.
Yeah.
just to kind of cleanse.
An enema.
Yeah, a little enema. And we wish you all the best. If you need more, which feels like a strange time to plug Patreon, you can have this episode and others going forward without ads. And we have an extra Patreon episode every week.
Every single week.
If you want it. Some are uplifting.
Far from that recent two-parter on John Casey. Wayne Gacy.
Yeah. Come on by and say hello.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.